Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, May 2nd, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemire.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Zimbabwean workers say their future looks bleak as the government appears clueless about job creation.
This government has failed. We are where we are because of their policies. We are where we are because they failed. A government that does not even care for the citizens. A government that does not even respond to people's needs.
A leading economist has blamed the worsening cash crisis on inconsistent government policies.
The Minister of Indigenization also played a role in extending big money out of this country when he was threatening to close companies.
And some Zimbabwean women who arrived home Saturday after being abused in Kuwait have reunited with their families.
By yesterday, I had gone to the place where they were. I think about 6:30, all of them had gone back home. So we are going to try and follow up on Tuesday.
There's stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Zimbabwean workers say their future looks bleak, saying the government appears clueless on job creation. In speeches to mark Labor Day, which is commemorated on the first day of May worldwide, some workers' groups in Zimbabwe say that they are suffering due to the harsh economic environment in the country. This year's event, held today at Rufaro Stadium, was organized by government and labor organizations. Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa told the crowd that Zimbabwe is trying all it can to improve the lives of workers.
Government has thus always been alive to the need to address the shortcomings of the legal frameworks with regards to the labor sphere. Since the period of independence in 1980, government has been concerned about the plight of the worker and has cumulatively and gradually introduced landmark pieces of legislation for their welfare. The labor landscape was drastically transformed from the repeal of the obnoxious Master and Servant Act, the Native Juvenile Act, and the African Recruitment Act, to the amendments of the legislation such as the Industrial Act and the Minimum Wage Act, which laid down the minimum conditions of employment, introduced industrial holidays for all categories of workers without loss of wages. In addition, vacation.
That there was Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa in Harare, but George Nkiwane, president of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, said President Mugabe's government has no clue on how to create jobs in the country. First, he speaks with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube about the current state of workers in Zimbabwe.
I think it's very clear and there's common knowledge that we now consider about 10% of the working population. So it means 90% of the working population is in the informal sector or they are not doing anything at all.
So now what is going on? What happens from day one to the last day of the month for a Zimbabwean worker?
Honestly, this situation is really dire. We don't even know what tomorrow holds for us as a worker. You go to work today, you don't even know whether your employer will say come back tomorrow or your contract is terminated. And so for some of us who are still going to work, you don't even know whether come back and be paid or you're going to be paid. So I mean, the situation is so really terrible. I mean, we are in a crisis as workers.
So what is the future of workers like, Mr. Nkiwane?
I don't even have a word to describe it. Because you cannot call yourself a worker if you go to work and you're not paid. You go to work and you don't even know what tomorrow holds for you, like I said. You go to work, you don't even know whether you work to do. Because honestly, the market, whatever it is right now for a worker, you don't even know whether your product will be bought. I know this is a country in depression, and this is a country with about more than 90% of unemployed workers. I mean, it's in a dire situation. You can't even describe it. There is no worker to talk about right now.
Can government actually rectify this kind of situation?
This government has failed. We are where we are because of their policies. We are where we are because they failed. It's a government that does not even care for the citizens. A government that doesn't even respond to people's needs. A government that is clueless on what to do right now.
That was George Nkiwane, ZCTU president, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare.
A leading economist has blamed the worsening cash crisis on inconsistent government policies and urged the government to reform to attract investment. The cash crunch has forced the banks to drastically reduce withdrawal limits, and thousands have been queuing outside banks for hours. Central Bank Chief John Mangujga says the long queues at the banks were an indication of the rise in demand for the United States dollar, as it has substituted all other currencies such as the rand, the pound and the euro, which were in use at the introduction of the multi-currency system in 2000. A senior advisor to the government and University of Zimbabwe economic lecturer, Gift Mugano, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that government must embrace change.
What is happening is that we are a dollarized economy. We are using the US dollars. We don't have options to print money. So if you don't print money, the sources of money under this environment is through exports. You have to export a lot of goods, then you receive money, which is income from exports. If you don't export, you also get money through foreign direct investment. The third form of income for an economy which is using multiple currencies is remittances from the diaspora. You also get money through aid, the money which you get from people who are going to give you money, like IMF, World Bank. So those are four sources of money for Zimbabwe. So if you look at the exports, for example, we aren't exporting much. Our exports are going down every year, year in, year out. As a matter of fact, our imports are two times our exports, which means we are externalizing money. We have become a tier economy, or a warehouse economy. So instead of bringing back money into the economy for circulation, we are sending out money. When it comes to foreign direct investments, I'm sure you appreciate Blessing. The Minister of Indigenization also played a role in extending back money out of this country when he was threatening to close companies, because that on its own created panicking within the international community, and you then have capital flight. So under the normal environment where you don't have option to print money, foreign banks become the lender of last resort, because they have an opportunity of getting money from abroad, like the Barclays, the Standard Bank. They can get money from their own sister companies outside. So if they are threatened to be closed, they will not have the opportunity of getting money, because they also be holding back to avoid the risk. The cash crisis is manifested because of the threat to close companies and also perpetuating increase in imports at the expense of exports.
So is there a short-term measure to try and address this crisis?
The short-term measure, I think what the president said is quite a good move in the right direction, where he actually made a pronouncement on the direction on indigenization, saying, I think what he was saying in short was that there's no companies going to be closed. It's kind of boosting confidence, and that on its own, in my view, will create an opportunity for kind of stability.
That was University of Zimbabwe economics lecturer Gift Mugano, who is also a senior government advisor, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. In another development, the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says its members are likely to stay away from work tomorrow when schools open following the government's failure to pay the delayed 2015 bonuses. The government had promised to pay the bonuses on Saturday, but failed to deliver owing to the current harsh economic environment in the country that has caused slow revenue inflows into the national fiscus. PTUZ General Secretary Raymond Majongwe tells Studio 7 teachers are upset about the latest development, and as a result, some of them have even failed to send children to school due to lack of money.
Apparently, the sad, stark reality is that we did not get our bonuses, and there was not even a single thread of explanation from anybody. It basically became speculative, and as usual, they want to use the social media to basically make us prisoners of war. We are being made second-class citizens, because after they have paid all their beloved sons and daughters, whom they respect and fear, now that it has come to the turn of the teachers, they have now ignored. They have not even communicated with us.
Are you going to engage the government over this issue?
Yes, definitely. ultimately will engage the government. But we are also sending a very clear call to all teachers that from the third, we must not do anything because government must honestly respect us. It is very unfair, very unfortunate, very uncouth for government to start behaving in the manner that it is doing. It is quite unbelievable and cruel to say that at the time when they gave all the other civil servants, the money was withdrawable from the banks. Now that it is our turn, our salaries that we got paid on the 26th, we can't retrieve them from the bank. Yet they expect us to be turning for duty on the 3rd of May, and we believe it is cruel, it is heartless, and it is criminal for government to conduct their business in the manner that they are doing.
That was Raymond Majongwe of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe on the line with Studio 7 from Harare. State officials were not reachable for comment.
Parliamentarian Priscilla Musiai-Rambui says the 32 women and girls who were repatriated back to Harare Saturday have now been assisted to return to their families following a brief stay at a shelter where they were offered medical and psychological counselling. Musiai-Rambui says she will be tabling the issue in Parliament on the next sitting to ensure that government takes full responsibility of trafficked citizens in future. Musiai-Rambui further said she visited the women and girls yesterday alongside Musasa project staff who will be doing the follow-up work after the workers' holiday.
By yesterday, I had gone to the place where they were. I think about 6:30, all of them had gone back home. So we are going to try and follow up by Tuesday just to see whether they arrived well and whether any of them have safety problems. Because as you may know, there may be different situations. Some of them would be coming from broken homes and we are not sure whether the reception is going to be okay. Some of them were married. We don't know what the situation is going to be with their husband. So tomorrow we'll be trying to bring such a project. We're trying to follow up each of the young women to see whether they have traveled okay and whether they would need any support system.
Are you going to take this matter up in Parliament?
Oh, definitely. I am still so angry. I need to let out because I am still angry with government. I think there are many things that government should have done, and I'm holding fire until I raise those things formally with government. But yeah, I think there are many things that government could have done. One, to make sure that these girls don't go and are not seen in terms of helping those girls when they were there. It is not our business as Parliament to be doing repatriation. That to be forced to do that is an indication of the level of greed that is in our government. That somebody, an individual, to fundraise and fund this is an indictment on government. But that awaits Parliament. And trust me, there is going to be a lot of frank, brutal conversations in that House.
That was MDCN lawmaker Priscilla Musiai-Rambui speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Meanwhile, Zimbabweans have castigated the government for failing to provide jobs and protect its people, saying this has forced some of them to go to several countries to seek greener pastures where they sometimes work in horrendous conditions, like 32 women who returned home from Kuwait on Saturday. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has more from Harare.
Ordinary people, experts and some opposition parties told Studio 7 that poverty levels in Zimbabwe have reached alarming proportions and this is forcing people to do anything in an effort to eke out a living. Movement for Democratic Change Secretary General Douglas Monzora said in that process Zimbabweans ended up being taken advantage of by unscrupulous people like what happened to the 32 women who were enslaved and sexually abused in Kuwait.
There is no employment in this country. There are no means of livelihood. So they go out of this country in order to look for employment because they are desperate. This desperation was created by ZANU-PF. It was created by President Robert Mugabe. We know that during the election campaigns, ZANU-PF promised 2.2 million jobs for the people of Zimbabwe. No single job has been created. And as a result, we have these women who are running away from poverty to try to find greener pastures. And they fall prey to exploitation.
He said Zimbabweans would not be traveling abroad in search of jobs if Mr. Mugabe and his party had fulfilled their promise to provide 2.2 million jobs in the run-up to the 2013 general elections won by ZANU-PF. Economic commentator Masimba Buchera said, while people were supposed to carefully consider job offers in foreign countries, locals were in such a desperate situation that they could take an offer anyway. He said it was worrying that government was failing to discharge its mandate of protecting citizens at home and abroad. Harare resident Memory Mbondia also said it was said that locals were abused and treated like slaves in other countries because the government was failing to provide jobs. She claimed that government was responsible for all the serious problems Zimbabweans find themselves in and said she believed the situation was more serious than what is being reported.
We cannot celebrate for just a handful of women who have come back. How about the rest who are there? What is the condition they are living in? Who's catering for their needs?
Another Harare resident, Denford Ngadziwore, was equally angry with the government's failure to create employment for citizens. He said human trafficking syndicates were taking advantage of Zimbabweans' desperate situation to recruit and market them abroad.
This is a desperate move by the Zimbabwean to seek survival. And there's ZANU-PF and Robert Mugabe. They are responsible for those disabilities that happened in Kuwait. And the only way forward for us Zimbabweans is for ZANU-PF and Mugabe to apologize to Zimbabweans.
Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe President Josephat Kawema told workers at an International Workers Day event in Harare on Sunday that in as much as industry wanted to employ people, it can no longer do so as it was almost dead and buried. Kawema said as a result, most people were poor and hungry.
It's an international issue. When you're hungry, you end up doing anything, including a lot of stupid things.
But for another Harare resident, Yvonne Musarurwa, some people in Zimbabwe are surviving in worse conditions than those in Kuwait. She said it was puzzling that the government had allowed commercial sex workers to operate freely while criminalizing street vending. A total of 32 Zimbabwean women that had been trafficked to Kuwait were brought home by a parliamentary delegation led by National Assembly Speaker Jacob Mudenda. They were welcomed at the airport by several government ministers, including Foreign Affairs Minister Simbarashe Mbengegui, who said the government was committed in protecting its citizens at home and abroad. Mbengegui made the comments despite the fact that his government had failed to pay for travel costs for all the 32 women back to Harare. He admitted that the International Organization for Migration had bought air tickets for 25 women, while a Zimbabwean businessman paid for the remainder.
We had been undertaking discussions with the International Organization for Migration relating to resources to bring back all our women. These discussions have now been concluded, and that we are going to bring back all our women who want to come back.
Welcoming the women home on Saturday, Labour and Social Services Minister Priska Mfumira said they will receive the necessary state assistance.
They have a safe home where they are all going to be provided with all the necessary facilities.
The Zimbabwean women who returned home are among 200 that were trafficked to Kuwait in Middle East, where they were promised good jobs, only to be turned into commercial sex workers and forced to do menial jobs. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metom Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
high cost of diabetes drugs threatens the lives of thousands of Zimbabweans.
And in sports, is in battle Dynamo's coach George Da Silva still in charge?
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump says the United States cannot, quote, continue to allow China to rape our country as he pressed his campaign pledging to reset America's relationship with the world. Tuesday's primary in Indiana is seen as a key contest in the race to become the Republican nominee for the November election.
Diabetic patients, especially those living in rural Zimbabwe, are finding it difficult to access drugs such as metformin, gliadenine, and insulin injections. And the ongoing cash shortages have worsened the problem. Our correspondent Patricia Mudadigwa reports.
Sugar diabetes is a chronic disease affecting millions of people in the world, including Zimbabweans. If diagnosed, one has to take specific tablets or inject themselves with drugs for the rest of their lives. Those living with diabetes in Zimbabwe are complaining that public hospitals that usually sell the diabetes drugs at cheaper prices usually are out of stock. They told Studio 7 that living with diabetes in Zimbabwe has become a curse due to the high cost associated with the condition. The Diabetic Association of Zimbabwe said a survey they carried out indicates that a diabetic patient needs at least $302 a month for drugs and other related costs. Georgia Sanyika, a diabetic patient in the Mainseke communal lands, Mashonaland East Province, said accessing the required medicine has become a challenge.
I am a type 2 diabetic patient, but lately I've been having problems in accessing the drugs, that is metformin or insulin. They are not there in our local hospitals. You know, it is difficult for me, you know, without medical aid to buy them, maybe in pharmacies or to go to big hospitals to access them. It's just difficult and expensive.
Dr. John Mangwiro, president of Zimbabwe Diabetic Association, said their members are struggling to survive. Mangwiro said even the sugar testing equipment used at most public hospitals is backward.
Diabetes screening services, you know, one should understand what's there and what's not there. Nowadays, the gold standard is what we call HbA1c. This is what other international people are using to really screen to know who is diabetic and who is not. That one in Zimbabwe is a new thing. It's coming and it's mainly concentrated in private now. The government has yet some movement, and with some machines donated by the Zimbabwe Diabetic Association, some central hospitals have those.
Mangwiro added that because diabetes is a lifelong condition, patients should be helped to access the necessary medication.
Yeah, strips are just like the glucometers. They are not readily available in abundance. Yes, you look for them, you find them. But at times, the prohibition is the cost. They are not there in large quantities. And at times, they run short in hospitals. At one time, we're calculating, we find that each diabetic needs about $302 per month to survive. And most Zimbabweans are getting much less than that.
Diabetic patients said they are hoping that the government will listen to their plight and ensure that diabetic medicines are given for free, just like HIV and AIDS drugs. The association said a number of those living with the condition end up losing their legs or side. The association also confirmed that those living in rural areas have to travel to their nearest towns to access the drugs. International Diabetes Federation Atlas 2005 puts diabetic statistics at about 10% of the 14 million Zimbabweans. Reporting for Studio 7 in Dema, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
Now we hand you over to Chuaniso Jani on the Youth Forum. It's time to engage.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This is Chuaniso Jani, your host for Time to Engage. Joining us today, we have Dr. Thomas Mtali, Knowledge Director for Africa Building Capacity Foundation. Hello, Doctor.
Hello. It's a pleasure to join you, Chuaniso. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. What is this Capacity Development Forum about? How can the youth benefit from this capacity development forum?
So this is the capacity development forum. Basically what it is bringing together various actors and players on the continent to discuss and look at the achievements around capacity building that has taken place over the period of time, and also to reflect on the key challenges in terms of capacity that still remain, especially in as far as the development challenges of the continent is concerned. This particular one, the FAID Capacity Development Forum, is focused more on how we can build capacity towards the continent's economic and social transformation.
What is your vision in building the youth?
That's actually a very important question. We are actually in the process of devising our next strategic plan. One of the key aspects that we have highlighted in there is how to create jobs for the youth. And when we're talking of creating jobs, not just having them employed, but also creating entrepreneurship that helps them to be employers. Because you and me will agree that part of the migration challenges that we're seeing, with people even sinking in the Mediterranean Sea, moving across from the continent to other parts of the world, are really in search of greener pastures, because the continent cannot effectively support its youth in giving them the jobs that they need. So we have a lot more people that are being trained, but they're not matching with the kind of spaces or jobs that the private sector is coming up with.
How does Zimbabwe hope to assist to help the youth?
If you're looking at the entrepreneurship base, for example, Zimbabwe is making the case, the need for a lot more indigenization. The idea is that if more youth, more locals are involved in the wealth creation of the country. One of the development challenges is youth unemployment. And so what we are trying to address as one of the aspects is how do we get various partners and governments, including the donor community, to make commitments to say how do we build the capacity of our youth so that they are relevant for the kind of environment that we are living in, that they are relevant to contribute to the sustainable development goals, relevant to contribute to Agenda 2063, and that they are part and parcel of the development agenda of the continent. Because they are in majority, at the same time, they are the ones that are not really in the driving seat of this whole thing. So it is an important forum, because then it begins to make the important players to recognize that there's a missing link here.
And that was Dr. Thomas, Knowledge Director of Africa Capacity Building Foundation. And I am Chione Sojani, your host for Time to Engage.
Thank you very much, Chione So.
And in sports news, after 7 years, Dynamo's dominance over Caps United is over. But still, Dimbare coach Paolo Jorge Silva maintains he is still in charge. Our reporter Michael Cariati gives us the story.
Caps United fans went wild after a 71st-minute goal from Dominic Chungwa gave the Green Machine a 1-0 win over their bitter rivals Dynamo's, ending a 7-year winless streak against their neighbours. The Green Machine last beat Dynamos in 2009 when Lloyd Shitembwe was the team's coach, and this time around, Shitembwe is back in the driving seat and was delighted for breaking the jinx after many coaches have come and gone without success.
I feel good, but I thought Dynamos gave us a very good fight. It was never easy, but at the end of the day, I'm happy for the boys, a short, great tenacity.
One of the Green Machine fans, Paul Mandire, thinks the former Cup Kings deserve to win by a wider margin than the narrow 1-0 scoreline.
The jinx has to be broken. Caps should be more organized, and we deserve even more.
Both Captain Method Mwanjali and Adford Gutu, who are out on bail facing charges of attempted murder and malicious injury to property, featured in the Caps United lineup and gave a good show. Gutu says he never thought of what happened off the field last week after a talk with Tembe, who helped him to concentrate on the task on the field of play.
He's a great coach. You know, coming from the situation, I spoke to him. You know, my mind, in football, whatever happened, from my mind, he was speaking to me in training so that I can concentrate on this game.
Silva maintains that he's still in his job. However, information that is filtering through is to the effect that Dynamos have held a meeting with former coach Tondela Indiraya with the view of roping him in as the new Dynamos head coach. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thank you, Michael. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk when our host will be discussing about Workers' Day. This is Jonga Kandemiri, leaving you with Ntungamili Nkomo.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night and a happy